Greetings, Mr. and Mrs. Middle America and all the ships at sea. This is Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast AM, and it's going to be an auspicious night filled with memorable guests and stories. Before we go there, though, especially in light of who George Knapp has on Sunday night, let me say, to the hostile alien armies hovering silently behind their cloaking devices just outside of Earth's atmosphere. Remember, eat the Canadians first. They're much better tasting and they have better health care and they eat a lot more poutine. So they're kind of, Canadians, the poutine flavored people. It'll buy us more time. The promos for Sunday night show on Coast to Coast sounding ominous. I can't wait to hear it. But you're not going to want to miss tonight's show either. By the way, if you're a Coast insider, you can slide through time. You can listen to all the shows, including last night's guest. We talked with Mitch Horowitz. The power of sex transmutation was a great first 2 hours, and then some really cool open line calls later on. But tonight is something that it's an opportunity we rarely get. It kind of fell into my lap. I'll take it. David Zucker, one of the best known producers of comedies, with his brother and with their friend, have been working together since the 1970s on some of the best known comedy films, including the still ranked number 10 Airplane. They're doing a special performance of that, and he's agreed to give us an hour. We'll talk to him in just a minute. But coming up next hour, The Last Pirate of New York. Our main guest is Rich Cohen. We'll be talking about that pivotal time when what had been organized crime at sea took root on land. And the last pirate of New York really becomes the first gangster. It's an amazing story. You've never heard it before. It's a great read. The Last Pirate of New York, A Ghost Ship, A Killer, and the Birth of Gangster Nation coming up next hour. But first, David Zucker talks about Airplane and the Naked Gun series and so much more on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. David and Jerry Zucker, along with their friend Jim Abrams, who had been writing together for years in and around the Milwaukee area before they hit it big with Kentucky Fried Movie, and then, of course, later on, Airplane, which is being celebrated coming up at a special event. If you'd like to see Airplane performed live, what a cool idea. It's going to be available for you. You can still get tickets for this event. Let's bring in David Zucker to talk about it a little bit first. Good evening. I'm so excited to talk to you, and it just happened on, I think, on Wednesday or whenever, when we first got the call that said you were available. So thank you so much for giving us an hour of your time. I know you're busy.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I can think of a lot of better things I could be doing right now, but I'm happy to talk to you, Ian.
Well, I'm glad. And you know what? We have a weird connection. It's not a very good connection, but I was a fan in a way of your movies, not because just of the fact that when I was growing up in the 70s, it was kind of Kentucky Fried Movie was sort of the hot midnight movie, the drive-in movie that people were going to go see. But because the older brother of a kid I went to school with, a guy named John Kretschmer,
Oh, yeah, he was my assistant director for The Naked Gun.
yeah. And
Yeah.
okay, so John's little brother Gary and I had been going to school since kindergarten, and we're still friends. And it was such a cool thing that we knew him, but I think he was a production assistant on Kentucky Fried Movie, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, I think he was a PA in Kentucky Fried Movie, and then he became an assistant director. So, and he did all my Naked Gun movies.
Yeah. So, I've never met the man, but his legend looms large in our neighborhood because
Oh.
of you and because of those comedies. It was our connection. It's like we knew a guy who was
We knew a guy.
related to a guy who was.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember when I was living in Milwaukee, and this was back in 1971. And, I heard that this other friend of ours, Dick Chudnow, was on Hollywood Squares. Or actually, the way I heard it, he was writing questions for Hollywood Squares. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm just 1 degree away from Hollywood stardom. I mean, I just thought that was the most amazing thing in the world.
Well, it is, and it's the kind of thing too, though. Your film had, well, Kentucky Fried Movie had huge impact anyway, and not, maybe not for everybody, not the way Airplane did, but it was the prototype for what Airplane was going to become, which
Right.
was a gag-centered film. But you had started to write Airplane even before you had written Kentucky Fried Movie, as I understand it.
Right. We wrote it, the first draft in 1975. And, we took a year to write it. And, of course, we couldn't find backing. So we went back to doing our Kentucky Fried Theater show on Pico Boulevard here in L.A. And after about a year of doing that, John Landis came to see the show and he said, "Why don't you do a movie of your show?" And that's what we did. We wrote Kentucky Fried Movie and got financing for it and did that. So we learned a lot being on the set. We had never even been on a movie set.
You grew up in and around the Milwaukee area, which,
Right.
as I understand it, was also kind of an inspiration for Airplane, in that you would, like I did too, grow. I grew up in around the northern suburbs of Chicago, so I watched a lot of late night television back when
Oh yeah.
television stations actually went off the air. I mean, back
I
like.
know. That's why I remember is that we have now come to a conclusion of our broadcast day
Right.
and what?
We've run out of things to say or show
Yeah.
you.
And then well this is to show you how long I've been around. When I was, really young, when I was 5 or 6, we would wake up in the morning, like on Saturday morning, and look at the test pattern for an hour, waiting
Right.
for the show to begin. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's funny because I grew up far enough out of the city of Chicago that we used to pick up the Milwaukee signals sometimes. I don't know whether it was atmospheric or whatever, but we would get things like Spanish midget wrestling or something out of, and there was a lot more. Milwaukee television had a lot more roller derby than we were getting in
Yeah, it had
Chicago.
all sorts of stuff. But we knew we were just a bend in the road. So, it's kind of, that's how we developed our humor.
Well, that's the interesting part, and that's sort of that Midwestern sensibility too, I think, to the comedy, which is sort of in awe of media, and in, sort of paying tribute to it, and at the same time lampooning it in a way that I think, well, I think it's sort of centered in a kind of humility in a way. I don't know why. I mean, I think that the humor and the is it doesn't. It's not it wasn't very it's not special effects oriented. It was
Right.
just the funny plays on words that you became famous for in Airplane.
Well, it was at a time where, everybody was doing politics, Nixon jokes and stuff.
Right.
And we just thought, that's too easy. It wasn't funny to us. And so what we were clued into was the absurdity of movies and television.
Right.
And so we started making fun of TV commercials. I mean, and this was way before Saturday Night Live or anybody
Sure.
was doing this. And we got a hold of some of the first home video equipment, and in the early 70s. I mean, what you can now do on your cell phone in color, we had these huge
Right.
reel-to-reel decks, which weighed
Right.
150 pounds, and a big camera that you put over your shoulder. So.
Right.
And we started fooling around with it, and then we did a theater, started a theater that combined live sketches and improv with our video segments.
Well, this creation of yours, the original Kentucky Fried Movie and then Airplane, it was an interesting transition because you are credited with inventing a whole new genre of movie comedy. Do you accept that?
Right. Well, we didn't mean to. We just had an idea, and it came out of what we used to do was we would record old movies, old black and white movies, and then we would redub them with our own voices. And so one day we saw Zero Hour, this 1957 black and white movie starring Dana Andrews, Linda Darnell, and Sterling Hayden, and we thought it was like unintentionally hilarious. And so we thought, well, we should redump this. But then we thought, wait a minute, why don't we just remake the movie with serious characters like Robert Stack, Nielsen Graves, Bridges.
Right.
And that was the idea that no one has thought of, which was essentially doing a comedy without comedians.
Yeah.
What we laughed at were not the comedies of the day, although we loved Woody Allen. But we just thought serious movies were hilarious.
You know, you say that it was a comedy without comedians, and we're transitioning with David Zucker from talking about Kentucky Fried Movie to Airplane. And I will tell you, again, coming up, there's a special event coming up for Airplane in just a moment. You're not going to want to miss if you're in the California area. But that wasn't necessarily true with the main character, because legend is that David Letterman, that you wrote the part that later was played by Robert Hayes for David Letterman. So he would have been the only comic in that movie.
No, that's actually not true.
Oh, good. Okay, tell me.
Yeah, we wrote it not with anybody specifically in mind. Ah. But then once we got to Paramount, we were auditioning people. And, you know, we had been fans. We would go to the Comedy Store on Sunset and see comics like Letterman, Leno. And Letterman was our favorite comic. And so we called him and said, you know, why don't you come in and read for this? Because we thought he was funny. And because he wasn't a silly clown Jerry Lewis type comic,
right,
of course.
Right.
He was a deadpan comic, so we thought he might be good. And so, you know, he came in and we chatted. He read the part. He thought he was funny. He did a very deadpan. Of course, he was very uncomfortable because he's not an actor. And
right.
So we did a screen test, and he hated doing the screen test. He was really uncomfortable. But, you know, we loved Letterman, and we all kind of laughed and said, this is not really for you, but, you know,
right.
And we've been friends since then, and we've been on the show. So that's, we never wrote it for him though.
Okay.
But we auditioned a number of actors, none of whom we thought could do it until Hayes came in.
Until Robert Hayes.
Yeah.
Who was like a TV guy. He wasn't
a TV sitcom, but he was more of an actor than a,
right.
He was no Jim Carrey or Robin Williams.
Right.
Or even Adam Sandler. He was an actor who could play comedy.
Want to hear a cool story about Robert Hayes?
I would love to.
So I worked for WGN Radio for a spell, and there's a story about him. He was being interviewed by Roy Leonard, a legendary Chicago talk show host, and there was a bus crash on one of the western suburbs, and they're involving children, and there was some fear of fatalities. I don't remember if it was, but it required the entire station to pivot into becoming a news station, as it was inclined to do it stories like that. And Robert Hayes, so it meant like anything else, any other frivolous conversation was over, everything to switch to the newsroom. And Robert Hayes walked into the newsroom and said, how can I help? And he manned the phones and called out to sheriff's departments and to other people for the next 2 or 3 hours before he left.
Oh, I'd never heard that story. You know, he's a great guy. And in the last about 10 years, we've become friends. I mean, you know, for 10 years after Airplane, I didn't really see him. But then we, you know, we would meet at these gatherings and we started being friends, you know, which we never were, like, you know, on a movie shoot. You know,
sure.
You're intensely involved with people for about 5 weeks or 6 weeks, and then you never see him again. But Hayes is a friend, and, you know, he comes over for parties and stuff.
Oh, good. Ask him about that story. As I understand it, he walked in and he said to the news director, hey, I think he went to Northwestern, maybe. But I think he said, I have a background in journalism. How can I help? And didn't ask, wasn't on the air, didn't do anything, just did this scut work.
That's great.
Pretty cool. So here's the event. Airplane, the reading, is coming up with very special guest Robert Forster, who's going to be there, right?
And Bob Hayes and I will be there also. We do, you know, we come up after there. They actually read the script on stage. It's very funny, really entertaining. And then Bob and I go up after one of the shows and do a Q&A.
Well, the VIP reception thing, that's sold out, but there still is general public tickets available, and you can find out more at treepeople.org. So I'm assuming the money here is going to help a tree-related charity.
To help this environmental group called Tree People, which I've been on the board for 20 years, and it's really a fabulous organization and really the only charity that I really am actively involved in. And I'm the longest continuously serving board member in Tree People. And they do this thing every year. And, you know, I get Paramount to give them the rights, you know, for nothing. And so and the proceeds are used to support the organization.
Love that. And in fact, the event, then we'll even put up a link for it. I think we put up a link to your Facebook page and to your Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. So I'm sure they'll be able to find out more information there, but I'll give it to you again coming up.
Yeah, you're not giving them my home address, are you?
I
need to get that straight. Man.
Not unless this goes badly.
I'll blackmail your guests.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time we've doxed somebody. No, I'm kidding. But so, David Zucker, you did something else which I think is remarkable. And I think about it all the time, actually. I'm very interested in chemistry and how, in terms of how people work together in groups. And you do something which not everybody can do well for very long, and that's work with family members. And so you and your brother worked together for a long time.
Right.
It's natural to start out that way, right? And maybe mom was saying, bring your brother, bring your brother.
We would make, you know, home movies in high school. And then we made movies for my film courses that I took at University of Wisconsin. And then we got together with Jim Abrams after we graduated from college. And, you know, we just out of a kind of a common interest in humor. And we were able to borrow some early home video equipment, which I had described
before. Right.
And we started the theater with another friend, Dick Chudnell. But it was great to be able to work with my brother. But Jim has become like a third brother.
I'm sure.
We kind of learned that to make a collaboration work. It's important not to take individual credit. So when people ask today, like, who wrote the joke, don't call me Shirley, or whatever joke they're thinking of, we not only don't, you know, tell who thought up that particular joke, but we honestly can't remember because we never valued individual credit. And that's really how the partnership works best and collaboration.
Well, but, you know, if you think about that, even that was sort of the idea behind Lennon and McCartney and McLennan Music. But even over time, that developed its own tension and kind of, you know, got pulled apart.
We lasted for, I don't know, 10 years or something. And then we were done. You know, all these things, they don't last forever. And we wanted to go off on our own. So we did. Jerry did Ghost. I did the Naked Guns. Jim did Hot Shots. We did all sorts of different things.
You know, I forget about your brother having directed Ghost. That is a great movie. That's a very well-told, very simple, beautiful movie.
Yeah, and it's like, I kind of laugh at the Oscars sometimes because, you know, so Ghost is nominated for Best Picture. And, you know, regardless of whether it should have won or not, you know, so Jerry is not nominated for Best Director. It's just kind of silly in my mind that, you know, what do they think? The movie directs itself? I don't know.
Right. That's, no, I've never understood that either.
Why would be nominated for Best Picture and not have the director. But our friend Pete Farrelly just did Green Book. He produced Green Book, wrote it, I think, and directed it also. And he did win for Best Picture, but I don't know if he was nominated for Best Director. So well, I guess that movie directed itself too.
Yeah, really. But I think that is always, you know, that there's he's not the only one. There's been a few other very famous directors who had movies that didn't get. Well, here we go. We'll take it into the break with the theme from Police Squad, which I just love, or Naked Gun. I just and I love the credits. Rex Hamilton as Abraham Lincoln, still one of my favorite lines of all time. Everything about this is fun. David Zucker coming back. And listen, if you want to go see him, we'll give you all the digits you need to know to be able to go to the event, catch this live while you can. We'll tell you more about that in just a minute. Plus, coming up after the top of the hour, the last pirate of New York was the first mobster. Rich Cohen explains on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. But so it is. One of the reasons why Airplane is such a classic, still listed at number 10 of all-time comedies. And Airplane, The Reading, is coming up with very special guest Robert Forster. David Zucker is our guest. We'll talk with him more in just a minute. He's going to be there that night along with Robert Hayes. And the general public still can get tickets. And you can find out more by going to treepeople.org. You can also follow David Zucker on Facebook and Twitter. You can link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. And hang on, because we've got a couple of people who want to talk to him on the phone, and we have more from him. I want to pick up where we left off, though, in the timeline of his career. Because he mentioned how his brother went off to do Ghost and Abrams went off to do Hot Shots. But, you know, David Zucker wasn't done himself, and we'll tell you more about that next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. David Zucker and his brother Jerry and their friend Jim not only produced one of the greatest movies of all time, one of the highest ranked comedies of all time, in Airplane. And when you look back on it, I watched it again not too long ago. I wondered whether there was any of the jokes you regret. And I'm not saying you should, and I'm not trying to be the PC police, but even at the time when it came out, there was controversy about some of the gags. As you stand now, would you have written the movie the same way?
Yeah, I mean, we would. I mean, there's just, you know, a lot of people, sometimes when I do a Q&A, I get asked the question, you know, could you do Airplane today? And one time I answered, sure, just without the jokes.
Yeah.
But, you know, but a lot of the things, you know, Airplane was rated PG when it came out. And, you know, today it would be R rated. But I think that, you know, there's a heightened sensitivity, you know, the jokes, you know, what we're trying to poke fun at the straight image of airline pilots, the way we chose to do that was by having him be a pedophile. So, but now I think people would say, oh, you're making fun of pedophilia. I mean, that really wasn't the point. It's, you know, we wanted to make a point about the, you know, the straight image. So that's how we did it.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, the black dudes doing the jive and having it translated. I mean, everybody's so sensitive now. I mean, who knows how people take that today. But however, if when the movie plays today, it's still funny. So that's,
right.
I think it does stand the test of time.
And it's not that there aren't comedies that are made now that have humor that pushes the line. I mean, I don't think we are at a place where there are movies without jokes or without topical humor in it, that because everything's too safe. I think there are examples. It's just you had a unique, you took some big risks, comedic risks. They paid off, but I think part of that had to do also with the way in which you kind of spread it around, right? Like the joke.
There's all different kinds of humor, really.
Right.
I mean, it's not all puns. You know, there was an occasional wordplay. There was, you know, we always did a who's on first routine from the time of Airplane, and it was over Roger
over, yeah.
So, you know, and that kind of started it, and we've done those in the Naked Guns, we've done
right.
It in Top Secret. You know, it's been always something like that. But there's all different kinds of humor. There's physical humor,
right?
You know, when when she goes up to, Stewardess goes up to play the song for the little girl,
yeah,
the guitar hits all the people in the head. And that's
right.
Like a basic
right.
Abbott and Costello Three Stooges thing as you can get.
Right.
So I think it's the mix of everything that makes it effective.
I think that joke, too, about the pamphlet of
famous Jewish
sports, American sports legends. That's so funny.
Well, we wrote it over 2 years. There was time to think up jokes.
So writing it but not being able to produce it, then being able to do a Kentucky Fried Movie, then being able to do Airplane, and then being able to do Police Squad originally as a TV series and then as a great movie series. Really one
right.
of my favorites.
Yeah, Police Squad, it was a half-hour TV, and I think people don't watch TV the same way they watch movies. And, we were up against Magnum PI and Fame. I mean, people
right.
would rather watch that stuff than Police Squad. I mean, if it were released today on TV, I'd probably be more of a home for it because there's so many channels and so many niche markets. But at that time, it was, they couldn't cancel it fast enough.
Like yeah,
Tony Stavopoulos, the president of ABC TV at the time, said at a news conference, Police Squad didn't work because you had to watch it. And he was right. One time he sat down with us and he asked us if we would put a laugh track on it. And we said, well, we can't do that. I mean, not because we were artistes or purists, but because it's like, it's not supposed to be funny. We can't tell the audience, where the laugh. So we just couldn't do it. And I think we felt bad for him because, it was obviously not working on TV, but we had faith in the character and the whole premise of it. So after we did Ruthless People, we walked into Paramount and Frank Mancuso was the head of the studio at the time. And we said, we want to do this failed television series as a movie. And he just kind of blinked and he said, okay. actually one of the easiest pitches we ever had.
Well, it's funny then, as you describe it, as it was in the same spirit as Airplane, it's a comedy without comedians that's not supposed to be funny.
Right. And exactly. So that's what Airplane was. Ostensibly, it's serious.
Yeah, but same thing with Police Squad. I never missed an episode. I thought it was great.
It was great, but it's just at least for 1982, it didn't work for the audience. I think I think Seinfeld took 10 episodes to catch on at least, or for
at
them
least.
To find it.
Oh yeah, no.
And we were canceled after 4. I mean. At the time, to tell you the truth, we were kind of relieved because it was so much work. It was much more work than we imagined because, grinding out a half hour of TV every week, the plan was to hire other directors and other writers to do it. But we couldn't be away from the store for too long.
It was a better movie series than it was a TV series, and it breathed better.
On a movie, we had 8 months to write it. I mean, we could really handcraft it. That's the way we like to do it. We just draft after draft, and then, on a movie set, you shoot 2 minutes a day, and on TV, it's like you got to do 8 minutes a day. Something it's an unbelievable amount of material you have to cram in.
Well, that the Enrico Palazzo scenes, that long stretch where it's so funny. It just, and so I love, I watch it, there are snippets of it are on YouTube and stuff, and that just totally holds. And I just, it's amazing how well done that whole thing was and how, backing up just a second, how often do you get asked about working with O.J. Simpson as Nordberg?
Yeah, well, I always say, look, you know, I really don't want to talk about it. The last time I saw him was at the rap party for Naked Gun 33 and a third. I said goodbye, sold him my knife collection, and I never saw him again.
That's what I say.
You know, that's what I say.
All right, let me get to West of the Rockies. Spencer is in Idaho Falls for David Zucker. Go ahead, Spencer.
Oh, Ian, I wish you were my best friend, first of all.
And move to Kansas. We'll hang.
And as an aspiring comedy writer, it's hard to put into words what an honor it is to talk to you, David. It's just amazing. So,
thank you.
With my first comedy screenplay under my belt, two-part question. Sorry, I'm nervous. I got stage fright pretty bad. But question one, how does it, you know, nowadays, what's the best way to get my screenplay into the right hands? And since you should always be bold. My second question is there any way to get my screenplay into your hands?
Well, there's no way to do that. But, you know, you really have to, it's like hitting a hole in one to try to get a screenplay to someone. You know, we never did that. I mean, we first did our theater, and then, you know, in order to get Kentucky Fried Movie made, we actually invested $25,000 of our own money, and our parents kicked in some to do 10 minutes of it, and John Landis directed, and then with that, then we got the like $650,000 to do the whole feature, and then after we got known as having at least written and produced Kentucky Fried Movie, and having run a successful small theater in L.A. for 5 years, then we were able to get an agent, and then we got the script to Airplane passed around, but still every studio in town turned it down. And it was only one guy at one studio who happened to like it, and that was Michael Eisner, who was the head of Paramount. And really, our career hung by a thread. If it hadn't been for Michael Eisner, we still wouldn't have done Airplane, I think.
Yeah. You know, thank you, Spencer. I would say, too, just for anybody, I mean, I teach media here at Kansas State, and there has never been a time when there are more tools available to people who are not willing to wait around to be discovered, that you can both produce and you can distribute your own material. It would be, it's always lovely when somebody comes along with a magic wand and goes ding, and you get your dreams to come true, but that doesn't happen very often. And as you mentioned back then, you were having to, you know, borrow these big clunky home video equipment to do what you wanted to do to get it started. But you can do more with a phone, you know, with an iPhone right now. You can shoot 4K, you can edit on a, you know, web-based site and do everything that would have taken, you know, thousands of dollars to do at one point, and to make a demo and to get that out there. So I don't know why anybody's waiting.
Right. You should. That's the best advice you could give. Don't wait. I mean, back in 1997, Matt Stone and Trey Parker were living in, I guess, Denver, and they made this short. It was a 6-minute, 7-minute short called The Spirit of Christmas, which essentially had all the South Park characters. And it was distributed real just informally on VHS tapes, and people would copy them and then send it on. That's in those days how things went viral, and that's how they got a deal at Comedy Central.
Yeah, and not to mention what happened with The Martian, which, you know, just a guy who started blogging and started writing, and it caught on too. So, yeah, Rob's in Dayton, Ohio. He's got a question for David Zucker. Go ahead, Rob. Rob, still there? I think we lost Rob. We'll go to Carl in Charlotte, North Carolina, for David Zucker.
Carl. Oh, man, what a pleasure it is to talk to you. You're cleared for clearance, Clarence.
Okay.
Hey, I guess I would have a question for you. And what I think makes the movie so funny for me, you know, people of an older generation, is when you see people like Barbara Billingsley Yeah. You know, doing June Cleaver, doing Jive, and Ethel Merman. The scene with Ethel Merman is one of my all-time favorites. But I was thinking about it when you said, could this movie get made nowadays? And I'm thinking back about Blazing Saddles and saying, could that movie get made today? But look at the stuff Tarantino gets away with. So the politically incorrect thing like Nazis and people of color. So without treading too heavily on that. But I think you could, it could get made again today. And just wanted to tell you, I think it's a comic masterpiece. Appreciate talking to you.
Thank you. Likewise. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, there's always, you know, for any era, you have to push the envelope. I mean, if I were to make a movie today, it would be pushing the envelope. It's, you know, you just have to be outrageous and you have to be original.
Right. I think that's part of it, too. And so, like, what was original was not offensive, though. I mean, I understand some people just get offended at stuff, and they're always going to be that. But, I mean, the stuff you did with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, that was funny. I mean, it was funny for sports fans, right?
Yeah, it has to get a laugh. I mean, the test is, and you can push the envelope. You can try to go over the line, and the audience will tell you if you succeed or not. If it gets a laugh, it's okay. If there's a big sucking sound and people are embarrassed or think it's really offensive, too offensive to laugh at, then, you know, you cut it out.
But we're running out of time. I wanted to get two other quick questions. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I thought you were done. The first is, who do you go all fanboy over?
That's an easy answer. I don't think any movies are funny. I mean, I just don't think anybody's out there doing good movies. But the funniest thing, what makes me laugh is the Impractical Jokers. I don't know if you've seen them.
They're on late night television. I see them all the time.
They are hysterical. And I met one of them, I don't know, about 5 years ago, Brian Quinn, and at a film festival. And he gave me the DVD, and I had never heard of them. He gave me a DVD of their first season, and I started watching it, and I could only watch 20 minutes at a time, and I had to turn it off because I was choking. I was literally choking, laughing so hard.
That's
so
great.
Those guys, I'm so glad I could laugh at something done by, you know, people who are many, many years younger than I am. And so I'm not just saying, oh, there's nothing good.
Right, right, right.
I'm so happy that, you know, those guys are succeeding, and they are funny.
Love that. This is a question that doesn't have an agenda, but I'm curious because I know that it's hard sometimes to sustain comedy as one matures. And I wonder whether does comfort kill comedy? Does success kill comedy as a comedy writer or producer?
I don't know. Well, I always try to, you know, keep doing what I think is funny, and you know, certainly I'm not desperate anymore. But I'm still hungry in that I still want to do movies, and you know, and I have scripts that I have that are funny, and I want to get done, and I'm going to get them done. So
good,
that's where I'm at.
I love the sound of that. Thank you. I so much enjoyed this hour.
It went by quickly.
Well, great. And so if you see John Kretschmer.
Yes, I will certainly tell him to show up at Tree People September 6th and 7th.
Yes. Well, just mention that a friend of Gary's, you were being interviewed by a friend of Gary's, his brother.
Okay.
And Airplane the Reading is coming up. It's a very special event. $20 tickets still available. Find out more at treepeople.org. I'll never forget this, David Zucker. Thank you so much for giving your time and for the generous way you answered all those questions.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Oh, it was terrific. And so it is. That's a perfect way, with a good smile on our face, as we head into The Last Pirate of New York, a ghost ship, a killer, and the birth of Gangster Nation. It all started with a question. Who was the first mobster? Rich Cohen will get into that. We'll find out more coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.